Welcome to Pop Your Cultural Cherry. My name is Lawin, and I am your host. In this podcast, I'll be talking about my unique perspective on life and culture here in Europe, the good, the bad, the things that you would need to adjust to if you have plans of moving to Europe or you're already living here. Welcome back, everybody, to Pop Your Cultural Cherry. This episode, I thought I would stick to the theme of my previous episodes, which was more about work and working in another country or working with other cultures. And today I have with me a very, very special guest. She joins us today to speak about her experience of moving from one European country to another, and later on working in international marketing, forging connections between the Asian market and the European market. So yeah, let's dive straight into the interview I had with Catherine. Yeah, so I think first you could give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself.
I'm originally British, and I do still hold a British passport. We'll see for how much longer, but right now I have a British passport, and I've been living in Austria for the last 20 years. So I came over here originally as an exchange student to teach English, and I just really loved the lifestyle that I had over here. And so after graduation, then I really wanted to come back again, which I did briefly. And I did a master's over here. And then I was in the UK and friends contacted me and they wanted to go traveling, but they didn't want to give up their apartment in Austria. And so they asked me if I'd like to come back. And I kind of thought about it for a while and then jacked in my job and everything in the UK and just came across to Austria thinking, well, if it really all goes wrong, then I could go back home and live with my parents for a bit and try and find something. So I just figured, you know, you might always regret it if you don't do it. So give it a go. I was studying French and German at uni, and German was my second foreign language. So I needed to go somewhere that was German speaking to improve my German. And I'd had contacts with Austria in the past as a both growing up, my parents liked Austria very much. So I'd been a couple of times and I had a pen friend in Austria, and I just found Austria much more relaxed than Germany. And I liked the culture. Yeah.
So you went from the UK, you went to Austria for a while, you went back to the UK. Now you're living in Austria again. And then what takes place? Like, maybe you could continue from there.
When I first came back to Austria, then it was a little bit difficult, first of all, to get a job, because at that time, people were thinking that if something went wrong or if I had a bad day at work, that I would just run home crying to the UK. And so it was quite hard to find my first job. And it took me a couple of years really to find a job where I felt, okay, this is a great place for me to be in. So I had a couple of in-between jobs and did some English teaching. But export was really my profession. It was what I'd done in the UK. It was what I'd learned. So I was really happy when I started working for one of Europe's foremost infant formula and baby food companies here in Austria. And so I was employed by them to take care of Eastern Europe initially, and then it expanded over the years.
Yeah, and I guess that's how you kind of got into dealing with Asian customers, right?
Yeah, definitely. So one of my colleagues left the company, and apart from me, they were all Austrian in the sales team. And my boss said to me, oh, you know, we all find it quite difficult to manage with these Asian customers, and because it's quite difficult to understand their English. And I think this would be a good opportunity for you. And as the Brit on the team, your English is better than ours. And so I expanded eastwards, as we say. It was a very great opportunity for me. And at that time, it wasn't so much business in the company. It was only very small business, just $100,000, something like that. And so it wasn't like a huge part of the company's success. It's obvious that Asia is an up-and-coming part of the world. And so it was an important emerging market.
I guess through the years, you've kind of helped grow that market, right, for the company, like in terms of successfully establishing your company in Asia.
At that time, I was with the company for 18 years before I started my own business. And by the time I left, then yes, they were doing high double digits, millions of euros of turnover in Asia.
you must have done a lot of things correctly, I'm assuming.
I did a lot of flying, let's say. I was there a lot of times. So we expanded from just being in Taiwan and Vietnam in the very beginning when I took it over. And we expanded into other markets, including especially China, after a huge food scandal with infant formula in China. And that was what really accelerated the business in Asia.
How did you like this whole experience working with Asian people?
It was very interesting at first because it was such a complete contrast to some of the Eastern European cultures that I'd been working with. And when I first started out, I was still working with those Eastern European cultures at the same time. So one week I might be in Serbia, where it was quite normal that if you had a disagreement with somebody, you would both be banging on the table and literally shouting at each other. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, I would be in Asia. And if we had a disagreement about something, we both would be smiling at each other saying, interesting. And, you know, and everybody would just be avoiding a little bit speaking too directly about the source of conflict. So it was a very steep learning curve in the beginning.
I still fall into this trap sometimes when I still try to be so Asian in terms of like me confronting problems or people that I can't really find the courage, but it's so normal here. It's just like how it's supposed to be here, that if there's a problem, directly attack the problem. In Asia, you like go around 10 kilometers around the problem before you actually try to solve it. So I think, yeah, that's interesting. And how about between the other Asian countries? Because obviously, Asia is quite diverse itself, right? Like maybe Vietnam, Taiwan, or other countries you lived in. Did you also notice some differences in how people work in these countries, or it's pretty much the same?
I would say it's always a little bit hard to say how much is national culture and how much is down to the individual person that you're talking to, you know? Especially if you're doing international business, you're often working with people who've maybe studied abroad. And so it's sometimes hard to really say how much of their persona is down to their cultural difference, how much is really down to the national culture where you're living. But of course, there are some topics which are always going to be hot topics. Many countries in Asia have this quite tense political relationship with China, for example. As soon as you start going to do business in China, then people, on the one hand, they're interested. On the other hand, they feel a little bit threatened by this because they just know that China is just so big, you know, suddenly it becomes such an important part of the business simply by its size.
How about in terms of like companies treating you? Like in that sense, you're the supplier and maybe companies have different policies in how they treat the suppliers, but maybe it could also be like a national thing that companies from a specific country treat suppliers differently. I know for a fact in the Philippines, our company, we had special rules on how to treat our suppliers. Obviously, I think those rules are mandated both by the company and by the country. But in general, like how did they perceive you? How did they accept you? Or how did they do business with you? Was there like any difference in that sense? Like, for example, like when I was working in the Philippines, our suppliers, we normally go for drinks. We normally treat them to do some activities with them. We play basketball with them or something like this. Just some crazy stuff. But I think in Europe, you have more rules about how you should approach this like supplier-customer relationship.
It was pretty much like you said. I mean, and it's the same also in Eastern Europe or also in the Middle East. Everywhere that you come to people, they want to show you something about their home country. So they want to take you for a nice dinner. They want to sit together with you. At least if you have a good working relationship with them, then they want to show you that you are a valued partner of theirs. And it's part of respect. So I guess it's the same in every country that you come to. In the beginning, as a supplier, you have this kind of respect. It's a little bit like being a teacher in school. You know, at the beginning of the school year, the teacher gets some respect because they are a teacher. And after that, they have to show you that they earn that respect. And it's the same with a customer-supplier relationship. First of all, you have an automatic kind of respect because you come from a certain company. But if you want to keep that respect and build on it, then you have to show that you're competent. You have to show them that you're interested in their culture, genuinely interested, not just, okay, I want you to buy something from me. And so you work together. Like you mentioned, I've been to karaoke, I've done go-karting, I've been for foot massage and all of those kind of things that, you know, or been to some kind of sightseeing, maybe night markets, or, you know, maybe visited some temples or something like that. But all those kind of small activities that you can do after office hours to build a stronger relationship with people. And I think that especially in Asia, that relationship building aspect is just so important. You can't just talk about work 24 hours a day.
And how about in Austria? I guess you guys have your own suppliers. Is there the same kind of approach, or it's a bit different?
I would say, I think it depends a little bit. I mean, now that I'm working for myself in consulting, then it's less formalized. I guess within Europe, a lot of supplier manufacturer relationships are managed by the fact that you have to be very careful that you're keeping to all of these compliance regulations, and that you're not bringing people gifts that are too valuable, or you're not taking them for some kind of night out that could be counted as being like a kind of bribery, you know? So within Europe, this is quite a hot topic. I'm sure you've maybe met this also a little bit in Germany. Whereas I would say, if you're doing international business, as long as you don't overdo it, then, you know, if I would go to clients in Asia, then I would bring them maybe some chocolate or maybe a bottle of wine from Austria, something like that. Just something small to show that the culture, and, you know, or if they had kids, maybe Haribo or some, you know, some special edition of something that the kids would like.
Wine and Haribo. Sounds like a good evening. How about in terms of like work culture? Did you see any differences?
I would say that usually in Asia, many companies, they work very long hours. And there's very much a culture of presenteeism, that people have to be in the office. You know, people tend to work fixed office hours rather than flexible hours. And many companies, they like their people to be in the office. At least prior to 2020, they didn't want to have their people working from home or something like that, because that isn't the way that they do things. And for me, it was often that I saw a lot of people who would spend a lot of time in the office, but it didn't feel that they were being very productive. You know, for the part of me that's used to being in a Germanic environment where you try and make everything very short and you can talk about things very directly. Sometimes being in Asia, you feel as a European that maybe discussions take much longer than you're used to, because you have to go more indirectly to certain topics, or because you have to have more circular discussions about things. And so I would say that there's certainly some differences in working habits, and some of them, I guess, are regulated by law. You know, it's quite difficult in the EU. If the authorities realize that your staff are working more than a certain amount of hours, then they will fine you. So, and in China, nobody really cares about how many hours your staff are working, as long as your staff are, you know, still working and still there. So,
still there. That's interesting from our perspective. But in terms of these differences, how did they come across to you? Did you get annoyed at them, or like, were they irritating for you to work with?
I would say, of course, in the beginning, it's a learning process where you're listening and you realize that the person you're talking to isn't going to talk. You know, actually, that they have a problem with a topic that you want to talk about, but they're not addressing it properly. And you're just kind of waiting for them to address it. And it's kind of a, sometimes it feels a bit like a kind of game, because on the one hand, you as the European, you're trying to remember that Asian culture, you shouldn't attack things too directly. And on the other hand, you have a partner who maybe is also trying to remember that they should address problems more directly, or that they can address problems more directly. And so sometimes it happened that, I mean, sometimes it's just frustrating, you know, when discussions go round and around and around, and it's 2 a.m. and you're still discussing the same topic that you were discussing at 3 p.m, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, sometimes I had the feeling that, especially in China, if a partner knows that it's expected that you would come back to Europe with certain decisions, that they would wait with certain topics until maybe half an hour before you need to leave for the airport. And then they would bring the topic and it kind of creates this pressure for you because you have to answer the question in that half hour, you know? And I think that it's also that question that, at least in many Confucian cultures within Asia, the meeting is not really the place where the decisions are made. Maybe you discuss all of those topics with individual people in bilateral discussions before the meeting. And at the meeting, it's just like open discussion, semi-open discussion. Depending on the hierarchy, it's like something for show, you know? And it's like just to put the rubber stamp on it.
It's a formality, you know?
It's a formality in a way. And I think that's often very difficult for Europeans to realize that you have to do this pre-work to the meeting, and then the meeting can be quite quick. And if you don't, then you sit in the meeting and you see there's 15 people in there. They're not actually saying anything because their boss is saying something different to what their opinion is.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, so let's talk a bit about work values. Like, do you think that there are some things that you learned from working with Asian cultures that you would want to kind of use in terms of your success here in Europe? And maybe there are some values that, you know, as a European, you would want Asian people to learn to kind of be more like complete, like a complete salesperson or a complete marketing person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I think for me, what I learned a lot of in Asia was this idea of being extremely flexible and of looking for what are the opportunities out there and to move with them. And that if something changes in the project spec, that you go with that and that you don't try to push forward and maybe to not to over-engineer things in the beginning, but to go a little bit more with the kind of lean manufacturing model, let's say, that you try to get a minimum viable product and get it out there and then iterate rather than try and over-engineer, which is a very German way of, you know, it has to be perfect before we put it out into the world. And I try to adopt that a little bit from the Asian mentality, this speed and this way of doing business and of taking care of people. I think Asians have fantastic levels of customer service in lots of cases.
The difference is very, very big, especially here, like in Germany. Like I don't know. It's worlds apart. Let's put it this way.
Yeah. It's on a different planet, let's say. If we're talking about going in the other direction, I think that for Asians, on the one hand, they could in many cases learn a little bit more about work-life balance, that it's very easy for Europeans to say that Asians work inhuman hours, but in Europe, we tend to have quite high salaries, comparatively speaking. And so it's very easy to say, oh, you know, if you worked enough hours or if you're on holiday, then you're on holiday. It's more difficult for Asians to make that decision. And it's also not so much the culture at the moment. And I think, though, that that will change as the general level of prosperity increases across the region, that then people will be more wanting, okay, if I go on vacation, then I'm away and I'm on vacation and only for emergencies, please call me and not every 10 minutes to send me a message, you know?
That's a wish for me as well. Like, I wish that could be true, like in the future, but it's hard for me to imagine, honestly. It's hard to imagine. But I that's one thing I really appreciate, like working in Europe, is actually they really respect, you know, the non-office hours and your vacation. It's really respected. And I think, yeah, I agree with you on this. Like, this is something that has to change in our culture. It's sad, actually. It's pretty sad. Now let's talk a little bit about your own agencies. You were working for this company that made infant formula for a couple of decades. And then what made you kind of start your own thing?
I reached a point in the company that I was in that I didn't feel that I was going to be able to progress any further within that company. And also, I felt like I'd been with the one company, albeit in different positions. You know, I'd progressed upwards from being an area manager up to being head of sales for Asia. And I just felt that it was time for a change. And that if I didn't make the change at that point, or soon, let's say, then I wouldn't have the courage to jump out of this comfortable place of having a salary and to set up on my own and to try it. And I just felt like, okay, I don't want to get to be 80 years old and to have some kind of regrets that I never had the opportunity to be my own boss or build my own thing. And I was worried that if I waited too long, then basically I wouldn't have the balls to go for this decision. So,
and maybe you could tell our listeners, like, what's the aim of your company and who you're trying to help, what kind of problems you're trying to solve in the market.
Okay, so basically what we are doing is that we are helping small and medium companies to expand their business internationally. So that could be expanding eastwards from Europe or westwards from Asia. And in some cases, they just need a little bit of help with an export strategy or to find a partner. And it's like a project that you finish and that's the end of the project. For some cases, it's also maybe ongoing support that they would like somebody to be their extended sales team. And sometimes a company would like some coaching for their sales team or for their export team. Those kind of different services, and the aim being to take away the fear of small companies of going outside of their own borders.
Assuming is that these are European small, medium companies that want to expand to Asia. So do you think normally these kind of companies, they're not equipped with what it takes to kind of succeed or, you know, enter the market there?
I would say not every company is equipped with what it takes to succeed in the Asian markets, but a lot more of them are equipped with the necessary background, but they maybe need a little bit of help to get started, to get some introductions and to hold their hand a little bit in the initial phase of that project.
Yeah, I guess with your tons of experience working from Europe to Asia, I mean, there's a lot of knowledge that you can impart with your clients. Previously, it was more west to east, I'm assuming. And now, do you see some kind of like difference in terms of that, I don't know, that balance of trade coming from Asia to Europe? Or do you think it's still the same, like more European companies are trying to enter Asia than it is the other way around?
I think there's a lot of both. I guess a large part of the Asian business that comes into Europe tends to be what we think of as hidden products, which are like cheap manufactured products like textiles or cheap electronics that have been maybe manufactured in Cambodia or Bangladesh, or electronics which are manufactured in Vietnam or in China. So I guess people, when they hear made in China, made in Cambodia, made in Vietnam, they're thinking of all this cheap stuff, and they don't realize that if they go and look at their Nikes, that they're probably also made there as well, you know? Or if you look at the back of your iPhone, it's also made in China. So I think that there's a huge amount of stuff that's made in Asia. What I think we don't have so much of at the moment are Asian brands who come across to Europe as brands as such. Of course, you have companies like Hyundai or Samsung that are kind of household names, but there are an awful lot, I think, of other types of products out there that maybe in the future will make it across to Europe, and which it could be very interesting. I think also in the design space, there's a lot of up-and-coming products. And I think this awareness of the kind of quality standards that people in the West are looking for, this is increasing a lot in Asia. And consumers aspire to this themselves, and then they want to export it.
I mean, probably it's just a matter of time. Like, there's a lot of up-and-coming Asian brands, but yeah, I guess they need to get more established in Europe especially. And I guess that's where you come in, right?
I hope so. Yeah, that would be the plan.
Do you have any other advice you'd want to give, like, aspiring international marketing people, like young people?
I think that for anybody who is looking to be a good all-round marketer, then it's great experience to actually have international experience and to realize that the things which are considered must-haves or must-dos in your market might be completely different if you go to a market which is even just 1 hour's flight time away. And that can also be within your domestic market, you know, especially if you're in a larger country, or like with you from the Philippines, I'm sure if you go from one island, if you go from Manila down to Mindanao somewhere, then you have a different kind of culture and you need to address customers in a different way in order to get the maximum out of your marketing dollar. And at the end of the day, marketing is always about addressing the client's needs and their wants. And so this flexibility, the best way to get it, I really believe, is to go in an international environment and to have some experience there. And apart from that, it's just the fact that it's so much fun to work in an international environment. That's the best part about it for me, meeting new people and having the chance to learn about them.
That's been wonderful. We've heard a lot of really interesting insights. And I think also you imparted a lot of like experience and knowledge in this, I don't know, 30 minutes that we've been speaking. But yeah, maybe if you can tell our listeners if they want to reach you, if they're, you know, a small company in the Philippines, for example, or they're a small company somewhere in Europe and want to enter like the Asian market or the European market, maybe you can tell them how they can reach you or something about your company.
The easiest place to find me is via my website, which is katherinereed.com. Otherwise, I'm to be found on LinkedIn or these days sometimes on Clubhouse as well.
Thank you everyone for tuning into this week's episode of Popular Cultural Cherry. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Catherine. In the upcoming weeks, I'll be doing more interviews with other interesting people from around the world. If you want to stay updated with my podcast, make sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Popular Cultural Cherry. And I guess stay tuned for my next episode.
Thank you for listening to Popular Cultural Cherry. You can listen to Popular Cultural Cherry on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or other podcast apps or websites. If you want to stay updated with the podcast, follow us on Instagram and don't forget to like our Facebook page.